C1PH. Number 2A.
Now we take the chapter, and I have given you epitomes, and I would invite you to take those epitomes in front of you, because I go now through these various subjects. First on page 1, where I have given just a lot of references which may clarify the standpoint of the chapter. So, do you have the first page of my epitomes in front of you? What I intend to do this weekend is to take the whole chapter, if possible, because the chapter as such, the text as such, I think, should give no difficulties to the student to understand. If you take sentence by sentence, I think it is a very easy chapter. So I can trust you now that with the epitomes you can make your own study with the chapter. What I can help is really to give the standpoint of that chapter so that the various paragraphs and sentences always make sense under the overall standpoint of the chapter. Namely, truth is revealed, it needs only to be practiced. In order to give an insight into the standpoint of the chapter, I have given on that first page various references, and I'm going to take them quickly. What does physiology really mean? Physiology is a branch of biology. Biology has to do with living organisms. So you at once hear the subject is here living matter. The question that there is life in matter. What is the answer to this question of life in matter? That physiology is a branch of biology and really deals with the processes, with the functions and activities of living organisms. Therefore, we touch here that very practical subject which says there is life in matter, and in that organism there are activities, there are functions, there is power in it, apparently intelligence in it, and so on. It is therefore the question that there is intelligence or mind in living matter. That's physiology. An intelligent process in living matter. Well, our main problem is always that we have the belief in a body, which is organism, therefore a belief in life in matter, and a belief that some intelligence or some unintelligence is governing that body. It is as if here the question of life in and of spirit would be the answer. Really, when one looks up what Mrs. Eddy says in other chapters on physiology, one is surprised to find that she practically always speaks of not only as life in matter, but as a counterfeit of ontology. That ontology, which is really the science of being, of spiritual being, is the answer to physiology. Now, I feel what we have been doing during the last summer, last winter, all through the long winter nights, was seeing being as a spiritual reality. Life in and of spirit. Mrs. Eddy says, ontology receives less attention than physiology. So the answer to physiology is to give more attention to ontology. That would be the practice for the whole gamut of disharmonies of the physiological body, that we would practice ontology, that we would stick to the fact about the error, namely to ontology. She says, you remember how when she was healed in 1866 of that fatal accident, that which was revealed to her as the healing truth was life in and of spirit. This life being the sole reality of existence. Can you hear? That which heals, the healing truth, is what? Life in and of spirit. That's the healing power. The healing power is not that we have a theory of life in and of spirit and then try to apply that to something else. The very fact that we can stick to life in and of spirit as the truth about the situation is the healing. It's the healing power. So if we just catch this tone, you will see how that tone just goes over and over through all the pages. What does she say in the scriptural note 1? That scriptural note says, therefore I say unto you, take no thought. I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body what ye shall put on. Is not life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Can you hear what she says? Take no thought of life in and of matter. That's the practice. Truth is revealed. The chapter Science, Theology, and Medicine has revealed the truth. It only needs to be practiced, and the practice is not to practice on the situation, but to take no thought, to look away from it, to turn our back on it, and to look right into the immensity of truth, life in and of spirit. That's the practice. Can you see what I want to bring out? It's a very simple point, but you have to suffer me for a whole weekend that I point out this 1,000 times. Why? Because we know so well that the next morning, we don't believe in it anymore. Right the next morning, we think, how can I solve this problem? How can I apply that which I have learned to this problem? And therefore, we may suffer it that we impregnate, so to say, our consciousness with the right sense of practicing truth. Namely, take no thought of life in and of matter. Therefore, take thought of life in and of spirit. Then we practice it. She says, the demands of truth are spiritual. They are spiritual. And reach the body. How on earth does truth reach the body? Through mind, capital M. Well, certainly not through our minds, through our thinking. That's just mental practice. That we can have in all sorts of metaphysics, from new thought up to I don't know where, but that's not science. Science is based on mind capitalized. That wonderful term of mind, where truth reaches the body through mind. So let truth reach the body through mind, and then we practice it. If we let it happen, if we let it be done so, that truth reaches the body through mind and not through our mental activities. See, I think it comes from that, perhaps, that we say, I will give you a treatment. Yes. And then combined with that, a form that because I think about the situation, some transplantation and some transmigration or migration from truth to the situation will take place. Instead that the practice is in that calm and pure sense that truth knows its own truth. Now, because truth is mind, knows the whole truth about everything and therefore demonstrates itself as itself and through itself and to itself. And that's health. Then truth reaches every situation, every plane of proposition or problem through mind. It says, the best interpreter of man's needs said, take no thought for your life what he shall eat or what he shall drink. He says about take no thought, he says, the less that is said of physical structure and law, and the more that is thought and said about moral and spiritual law, see, the higher will be the standard of living. So we get the higher standard of living and a better health, as she says here, in the way that we take less thought about life in and of matter. Less thought we take about any problem. The more truth is revealed and we stick to that truth and look at that truth as the only truth, the more we practice that truth. She says that when your remedy lies in forgetting the whole thing, in forgetting the whole thing, it isn't knowing the problem and then see how truth is bigger than the problem. That's duality. It's a fight. It's a terrific fight. That's why so many fight with their problems. Well, if you fight with a problem, you certainly make a devil and not a healing. You paint the devil right on the wall so that you can see it every minute. If you fight something, we make a duality. We rise up an opposition. But if we can turn away as seeing that the whole situation is just an illusion and turn to the immensity of mind, to infinite mind, then really we start at the right point. She says, when rested from human belief, see, to rest away from human belief, that's the only struggle perhaps we can go through, to rest ourselves away from the human belief, and based on science or the divine mind, to which all things are possible, that case is not difficult to heal. So, that first scriptural note, you see, gives us the key again, which says, take no thought. Because we know very well that if we take any problem very seriously, then we do the very opposite of what we should do by looking at it through the seven synonymous terms. Because if we look at the problem, we first get mesmerized by the problem. Second, we think it is real. Third, we give it a name of disease, a name how long it is, how long it will last, how long it will take, how difficult it is to cure, and so on. And then, when we have given it name, then usually we say, and there is a theory about this problem. And we accept a theory, a medical theory, or a hygienic theory about this problem. Then suddenly we feel, in the fifth, that we feel that this problem is self-existent, that it has life by itself, existence by itself, that it is self-existence. And then we say it is true, and then afterwards we fear it. That's usually what happens when we are not looking away from the problem. If we always have a good look at it, then we begin to argue with it, we are mesmerized by it, we feel it is real, we give it name, we build a theory around about it, and we think it is existing by itself, and that it is true, and then we are jolly well afraid of it. But Christian Science practice starts, be not afraid. Well, we can only be not afraid if we see the whole build-up of mortal mind to the point where it can frighten us. Just by saying, well, don't be afraid, doesn't do very much. Or have you ever seen that if somebody is in a great difficulty and is full of fear, and if you just tell them, don't be afraid, that he's no more afraid? I have never seen one. Perhaps you have, perhaps it exists, it may be. But in a general way, just by saying don't be afraid when one is deep in fear, doesn't do very much. But if you look at it, how that has been built up through mortal mind's process, then by analyzing it, one sees that it is just building on assumption and illusion, just the mesmerism. So, look away, take no thought. Yes, but let's be careful. That alone may be dangerous. That alone maybe is just the policy of, an ostrich? Yes. Putting one's head into the sand and say, après moi le déluge, whatever comes afterwards, that's all right. It may be fatalism, which says, oh, I don't care. It is escapism. Well, all that is not the solution, really. So, take no thought is the first step, but not the last step. And that's important to realize, that we just don't leave it there and just say, oh, blah. You see? Because then comes the practice of that truth which is revealed. Then comes that which says, now, what have I instead of it, in place of it? And we must find a great compensation for taking no thought about evil. We must take some thought about God. And so must turn to the whole Word of God. Therefore, the second scriptural note gives us that sense and says, He sent His Word. So that's the answer to take no thought. Instead of just getting away from it, now something comes to us. He sent His Word and healed them and delivered them from their destruction. So here we have the balance in those two scriptural notes. The right practice. See, that's practice. It hasn't yet said how to apply it to this and this situation. What do you do if you have this and this and this to meet? It's the principle of practice stated here, which says, look away from the problem. John Dole used to say, put it right behind you in the corner, and then look into the immensity of mind. See that instead of the working of evil, there is the working of good. He sent His Word and healed them. So the healing comes through the Word, comes from God. It doesn't come from us applying truth to a situation. It comes by turning to the immensity of mind. She says in this connection, only through radical reliance on truth can scientific healing power be realized. See, that's the practice. How can I have scientific healing power? She says, trust truth, trust your revelation, trust what you have been seeing up to now, trust that which the textbook has stated up to now, trust that revelation, trust that theory. Then it is not abstract, then it is concrete. because that trusting is very concrete. Future. We know how concrete that trusting is. How concrete that is if in the face of apparent evil, we have to trust God, to stick to it, not to give in, not to waver, not to become uncertain about it, but to be still and unwavering in it. Yes. Then, having given through these two scriptural notes, so to say, the key for the chapter, she brings in the first paragraph an introduction, as I see it, where she writes, physiology. What is physiology? Let's just always translate and say, it's the belief of life in matter, and the processes and activities of life in matter. Physiology, she says, is one of the apples from the tree of knowledge. From the tree of knowledge. Evil declared that eating this fruit would open men's eyes and make him as a god. Instead of so doing, it closed the eyes of mortals to man's God-given dominion over the earth. See, you have again that combination. I don't know how clearly you can listen to that. It's always showing life in and of spirit is the healing power. Life in and of spirit is the dominion we get over all the earth. Truth. Always, if we want to have dominion over the body, over a situation, over a problem, that's what we want to have, that man has given dominion, truth dominion, the power of truth over error. How can we realize that? Always life in and of spirit. Always by seeing that being is wholly spiritual, and that spiritual does not need to be transferred to a material, corporeal situation in order to heal it. This tree of knowledge, as materialistic knowledge, she says, if materialistic knowledge is power, it is not wisdom. It is blood, but a blind force. Man has thought out many inventions, but he has not yet found it true that knowledge can save him from the dire effects of knowledge. So material knowledge, that sense of life in and of matter, has never solved a situation. Never. If we want to solve a situation, we have to take it out from the belief of material knowledge. Therefore, at the very end of the chapter, she gives the right knowledge. Instead of that material knowledge of the tree of life, she says, Christian Science says, I'm determined to know anything among you. Sorry, I'm determined not to know anything among you, save Jesus Christ and Him glorified, not even crucified. Can you see the solution for the tree of knowledge? In Jesus Christ glorified. In knowing nothing else but the glorified sense of being. Then we have man's dominion over the world. In this chapter, a lot is said about the next point you have on it, namely the power of mind over the body. If physiology is the power or function or activities of life in and of matter, then this power and function must be saved or resolved through the divine mind. So mind over body is a main theme in this chapter, showing how the whole concept of physiology can be saved only through a proper sense of the power of mind. She says here, as a man thinketh, so is he. Well, that's a very tricky statement. Sometimes I say I don't believe that. Well, not because I doubt it, but because we have to see it clearly. This is only true from the human standpoint. From the human standpoint, as a man thinketh, so is he. From a divine standpoint, he is always what God knows as himself. Always. He can't change. The true man is mind, consciousness of himself. From the human standpoint, he is just as much man as what he thinks he is. So let's be clear, and this brings us into a new subject then of this chapter, namely that this chapter is speaking a lot on the level of metaphysics for quite a while. And only when we come to the sixth and seventh subject that she lifts the whole thought of the subject out of metaphysics into science, into pure science. As a man thinketh is metaphysics, so is he. Well, if I think wrong, then I'm a bad man, then I'm a sick man. No. Man is God's idea. But metaphysically, I experience, humanly, just as much as what I have in consciousness. So, she goes on and shows, really, therefore, that the balance of power must be with mind, and that mind, capitalized, must at last assert its mastery. So we will find here in this chapter a constant impulsion to come out from physics into metaphysics, and then afterwards from metaphysics into science, into the science of mind. It says here, if you understood the control of mind over body, we should put no faith in material means. Mortal mind is the worst foe of the body, while divine mind is its best friend. So, can we see the practice? If we want to be kind to the body, we have nothing to do except to accept that there is only one mind. If we accept that there is only one mind, then mind controls the body. But mind controls the body. So let's get rid of that sense that we can control the body through mind. We can do nothing like that. Mind is too big then to obey us. What we can do is to turn to the one mind. That's why we had the first four chapters. To turn to the one mind and see that we have no other ego but the one mind. Then the Christ chapter starts right in and says, then mind is coming to us. Then mind is the only influence in the chapter on animal magnetism. Then mind is one with you, is Emmanuel with you. And being Emmanuel with you, mind controls every plane of thought, even the corporeal and physiological sense of thought. It controls the body.